fall. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, no doubt when you see you are. Grass smack dab in the middle of it. Grass smack dab in the middle. We are grass smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Thank you, Dr. John Hall, for that first hour. The book, the author wrote Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, a very disturbing book about how the government is using secret programs. And right now, most people would describe it as on an experimental basis. But not only should it not be secret, it shouldn't even be a program, but most of all, they're using private contractors, according to Dr. John Hall, which is another disturbing thing. There's no control that we might have over these private contractors. I remember a special report that came out a couple of years ago by a priest and another reporter with the Washington Post entitled Top Secret America. And in that report, they cited all the numbers of different private organizations scattered across this land, and what they were doing was that they were, the government, because of this so-called 9/11 security problem, they were instituting all kinds of databases on everyone in America, and they were using these private enterprises who had offices scattered all over the country, and they were providing most of all secret or top secret or secret information about citizens that I don't think anyone had a right to provide to these private companies. But under the auspice, under the umbrella of national security, they have locked down this country. And we're headed for destruction. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight, but she and I did this rebroadcast second hour about October the 2011 with John Breeding, Ph.D., child psychologist, and he has quite a story to tell. When he was a young man, he went through shock therapy, and he went on and got a degree at the university here in Austin, and he swore that he was going to help other people overcome their psychological problems and so forth, and he is abhorrently against any kind of shock therapy now, but he's a fine person. He has a very gentle attitude in approaching his clients and his young people that he helps. And so I hope you pay close attention to it. Getting back to what's going on in America today is that we have a big problem. And that problem is that government, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, they're growing big government. We recently had record tax collections in the last 4 months of this latest fiscal year. But what have those tax collections done but not balanced any budget? We're still behind $900-something billion. So how does that compute exactly? It's very, very puzzling that when you tax, Congress spends more. Tax and spend. Now, there are people out there, the Concord Coalition, headed up by Pete Peterson, formerly, you know, chairman of the Federal Reserve New York. All these big money people, some of them are beginning to wake up and say, hey, if we don't do something, we're going to lose the country to debt. And it looks like we're just about there. Now, we had this recent debacle of Brian Williams. It's unfortunate what he did. He just lied outright. But so he lied his way in. He's lying his way out. There's more and more distortions and prevarications that he's being accused of daily. We've got the Russians sitting down this last Wednesday with France and Germany hammering out some kind of a temporary ceasefire in the Ukraine. We've got oil that's beginning to strengthen and take on a little bit of a more robust price, around $60 on the upside. And so things are beginning to change a little bit out there as far as the, and the economy is not doing that bad. We've got this loophole under this Obamanism, you know, this immigration stuff with all these executive orders that will allow illegals to get, you know, an ID, a driver's license, and a Social Security number. So how are you going to keep them out of the voting booth? I mean, Obama is in big trouble with the Israeli lobby. Let's face it. Netanyahu wouldn't come here independently if he didn't want to drive a wedge between the president and Congress and between the president and the people in this country. So Netanyahu will be here next month in March. He will speak to a joint session of Congress. The Democrats are acting like they're going to boycott almost his visit here. So I don't see that totally happening, or it would be a slap in the face of Netanyahu. The Israeli lobby is very strong here and very powerful. I've said this before. Obama, President Obama, did not attack, Iran like they wanted to for several years in here, and so they're disgusted with him. They're very, very much so. Now we have special news breaking. I have an insider report. When Obama was here before the election to raise money, I had a person that attended the fundraiser, and he can attest. We're going to bring him on either with a full blown or some kind of a short, probably interview. It may just be on our site, but we'll let you know about it. But what he's saying is that Obama was using neuro-linguistic programming on those donors. And this individual happens to be, I'm not going to say who he is, an expert in neuro-linguistic programming. He was there listening to the speech at this big fundraiser out in West Austin. And he'll attest to the fact, probably be a recorded interview, that Obama was using neuro-linguistic programming on this crowd that was there to give him $20,000-$30,000 a piece. So, I mean, whether you're giving to the Democrats, whether you're giving to the Republicans, it's a manipulation of your pocketbooks and your hearts and your minds. We've got to wake up and come out of this very divisive, polarized, left-right, Democrat, Republican mind wash that we continually are being trapped into. The problem is delusion. What do we mean by that? I've been talking about this subject for a number of years, but to become deluded, okay, is to become, you could say, delusion in this case, the way that I talk about it on this program, is that we have been deluded by the wrong information, by the wrong people. Once you become deluded, so to speak, or delusional, then you're making decisions based upon incorrect information. And that's actually what's going on all the time. This Brian Williams and this and that, and I mean, the people that they put up as great saviors of news are just talking heads. And they're going to mislead us each and every time. So we have to awaken to something that is a higher-minded reality and view of reality than what they've been presenting us. They've been presenting us a view of reality that's based upon a highly educated population out there, but a highly regimented, you could say, education that has been very, very much so educated into a secular humanist type of view. And in that secular humanist type of view, you're going to get a very, very, you could say, a predictable outcome. It's going to be on the humanistic side. It's going to be on the physical side. It's going to be physically driven, it's going to be money driven, and it's going to be a man-centered versus a God-centered type of view. And so that's basically what has been conditioned into our public here, is that we've gotten a population that has been molded and morphed and educated and conditioned and programmed into reacting in a very, very predictable manner. And in this predictable manner, then, further manipulation can be achieved. They always bring up 9/11 all the time. You know, it gets to be, they'll just say, yeah, and after 9/11, we've got to go after these people. And what they want the hate and resentment. They want that to invoke that in you. And then you'll come back, yeah, let's go after them. Let's make Iraq a parking lot or something like that, or B-52s to level the place. Oh, I've heard these redneck, you know, people that talk like that. Are you kidding? See, that's what the reaction is sometimes. We must come out of this deluded state and try to attain some kind of fair-minded, balanced state, because we're being played for suckers. There's three things that we can all do. We can all begin to try to see ourselves better, and that means to know thyself better. And also, we've got to start observing our ideas as they're real-time unfolding in our minds, our thoughts, our conscious state. We are inundated by one group after another with all kinds of ideas that begin to capture us, okay? But what we don't see some of the time is that we don't see that we're processing and thinking on a real-time basis these ideas and these worldviews and these belief systems. And those belief systems and those worldviews usually end up reinforcing that ego false self state. And in that ego false self state, we just look for additional, nourishment from the worldly things that we're exposed to. A third thing that we could actually begin to do is to know thy world, you know? I mean, how many of us at a young age can begin to really view the world as it really is? We have all these biases and these predisposed, educated ideas and opinions, too much so. And in that state, you're only going to regurgitate the masters and the elites and the mind manipulators of the world. And they are there, and they know our human nature better than we do. My gosh, they are masters of deceit and deception. And they can, and this neuro-linguistic programming, they teach these new presidents how to go out there and solicit that money and then make these little jokes about the opposition and so forth and make everybody laugh. I mean, every party does it. Both parties, I'm not knocking one party or the other here. Both parties do this. Both parties treat the citizen as uneducated ignoramuses. That's what they really think about them. When John McCain the other day was putting down some protesters up in Washington, he called them lowly scum. Get them out of here. Well, that's really what he was saying, that many of the people in Washington think about the citizens as a whole. They've been so easily tricked and cajoled and BS'd with propaganda and deluded with the wrong ideas that are easily taken up by the so-called masses, that the leadership, they think that everybody's just a bunch of dummies, you know, and ignoramuses and stuff. And you know what? We have become a bunch of dummies and ignoramuses because we're putting up with this stuff in Congress. We're putting up with a continuous increasing in spending and war making by both presidents. Both George W. in the last administration and now Obama, they're war making. They're spending money. They're expanding government. They are taking our rights. They are destroying our freedoms. They are creating collective states in Obama's state, in his case. And George W., what I don't know what he was thinking about. George W. could have been a great president. at 9/11 on that day that he flew around, he was mulling over, I know, in his mind, what to do. The best thing that he could have done was go out and arrest those people that set up this 9/11 operation. But he did not. So he failed. It was the biggest failure of any president because he destined the country to a slave state, to a state of police actions and police state tactics, and a national security state. This is what's happened since 9/11. Obama could have come in and started trying to undo some of these acts that are very draconian. He did not. He betrayed the very constituent that he promised all of these great things to. He's actually, been worse for immigration and deported more people than some other past presidents. So he'll talk one side of the issue but do the other. So there again, we've got to start observing these people like they really are and start saying to ourselves, we need something to do here that will affect a change. We need to get back to local elections. We need to start identifying people that we can believe that keep their promises, or at least try to keep their promises under their circumstances. We need people that will speak up and that will come down on the side of freedom and democracy and republicanism. And I mean a republic, a democratic republic like the Constitution and Bill of Rights first set out. What we have come with is this new America junk that Jonathan Soros and his buddies are promulgating. Now, what is that? New this, new that, new politics, new economics? No, we need to get the government off the back of the common working person and off the back of the small businessman. Yes, we have problems with the corporate sector. We need honest money. Ron Paul was the only shining light in that last election cycle, in that last primaries. But the Democrats could easily demonize him, and that's what they did. When I'm talking to Democrats today, they don't have anything good to bet. Oh, Ron Paul is way off base. No, he's not way off base. He was what we needed to begin to reform the system that has gone awry and gone way, way off in a bad direction. So today, what Ron Paul was still trying to do and what the Campaign for Liberty is still trying to do is get the Federal Reserve audited, and that is an absolute must to support. The money system coming out of London and other capitals in the world are the real problem, but particularly the city of London. The money power has been the real problem since the 1700s, and even before that, when banking became formalized and became bigger business and became big business worldwide. It started out with Marco Polo, and then gradually they started being able to work out paying each other on each end of a trade deal. That was just international trade. But today, the trade angles today are no tariffs. They have to have a free flow for their goods and services throughout the world, and they can't have any restrictions on cheap labor. So these are the two things that they're really doing. Now, they'll go out here and support a collective left or collective communist or socialist left just to keep it divided, and then come over here and continue the monopoly of money creation. So they're playing, and also on this left, it's always a control left, like they did with the Weatherman and the SDS. They always control these people. They're in there with the Ford Foundation and these other front organizations controlling people. If you dig into this and you begin to look deep into what's going on in this country, what you're going to find is a very, very manipulated, sorcery-based elite combined with those in England and Europe, manipulating us, manipulating ideas, using groupthink, hive mentality. They're using our schools to program our children. Instead of environmentalism being something to clean up the environment, is to establish a political manipulation tool, and that's what environmentalism has become in the guise of some great, you know what I mean, savior of our planet, of Mother Earth. And the way that I see Mother Earth today is that it's similar to fascism. Fascism was based upon the state being supreme over the individual. Whether you're looking at Mussolini previous to World War II or during World War II, or Hitler previous to or during World War II, especially Hitler's speeches there at Soldatenfeld in Nuremberg, will say, "Give your all for the Nazi regime, for the Nazi state, for Germany. Give your all." So all he's preaching is to the individual was be a servant, be a slave to the state, and give your all. Today, the altruistic people that have been programmed to give their all for Mother Earth are being approached and manipulated in similar ways. We've got to wake up to what's going on out there and bring this country out of the doldrums and out of this slave state mentality that we have actually let it deteriorate into. I want to thank everyone for listening, and I hope you enjoy this rebroadcast.
And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Okay, Charlotte, how you doing? How's it going? Anything
good,
new on your mind that you wanted to talk about here at the beginning before we started the program?
Well, I'm just looking forward to our second hour. We have a very special guest, John Breeding, PhD, psychologist, counselor, activist, author of the book, The Wildest Colts Make the Best Horses. Looking forward to that very much.
Yeah,
and
he's coming up on our first hour here.
Oh, it's the first hour. I apologize. I thought it was the second.
Yeah, and then Lloyd Chapman is our second hour, yeah.
Oh, I got that backwards. I'm reading off the website, and I missed my apologies. There was one thing on my mind, George. I wanted to make sure the listening audience knew that J.P. Morgan and Chase donated $4.6 million to the New York Police Officer Foundation at a time when these Occupy Wall Street peaceful protesters are carrying on their protests, and there's just an alarming number of videos and news reports of police brutality coming out of these protests. And I just thought the listening audience should meditate and think a little bit about the fact that J.P. Morgan Chase gave the New York Police Officers Foundation $4.6 million. I think that's the timing of the money is questionable, and it seems to me as if they're trying to buy off the New York Police Department.
Yeah, right. Well, that thing, Mayor Bloomfield backed off of that demand that he was making of Occupy Wall Street just recently. Yeah, he wanted to clean them out and so forth. Giuliani said he would have just gone out there and just cleaned them out. You know what I mean? The former mayor of New York, you know. But anyway, Bloomfield
said...
There's
this thing called freedom of speech and freedom of assembly in this constitutional republic that we live in. And to have a former elected official to even say something like that is abhorrent.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about John Breeding. We're going to bring him on here in just a second. But let me tell you about this fella. He's a tall fella, but he's a loving and caring person. And this is what he sort of wrote on his own page here. He's an author. Also, he's a psychologist. He's a PhD counselor and an activist. An author of The Wildest Colts Make the Best Horses. Here's what he says on his site. He's been working as a counseling psychologist for over 25 years with individuals, couples, and families of all ages. And he says he knows the goodness of the trust and of human nature and natural path of human development. And he says that we have emotional and physical hurts that occur along the way that cause distress and tend to interfere with our inherent loving and intelligence. And John Breeding is a loving and an intelligent and a caring person. Welcome to our program, John Breeding.
Hey, George. Thank you for having me on the show.
Welcome back.
Well, you are loving and caring. And you know what? You got that directly from your practice and being who you are, didn't you?
I got it by virtue of being born into a world that gave me... enough love, I guess, to stay fairly in touch with who I am. And that
right.
certainly
what
happened
did,
to
yeah, what, yeah, what did you have to, what adversities did you really have to overcome yourself, John?
Oh, well, it started with my birth. We're going to go right back to that. We won't go back to back to pre-birth. I don't know about that so much. But I was born in 1952, and that was during the time when the medical profession had totally the love affair with technology and control had totally taken over childbirth in this country, and so. For just about all of us in that generation, birth was really a nightmare. You know, my mother was unconscious, and so, you know, I was born to an unconscious mother, which means I felt like she was dead. And plus I was nauseated from all the drugs that she had been given. So I was born sick and nauseated and unable to nurse and left in the hospital and for about 10 or 12 days and was really dying and wasting away, and finally she came and rescued me, and I survived. But that's the beginning.
Well, I tell you, hey, you know what, John? You can't get a tougher beginning than that, can you? Huh?
Oh man, yeah. It was tough, man. It was terrible, you know. And we remember that, you know. That's all recorded in our bodies and in our psyches, and it's a major, major imprint to start with, you know, when you're born sick and nauseated, and then you're slapped, taken into harsh cold and light and steel and kind of slapped around, and then after that, when you're about a day old, you're genitally mutilated. They call it circumcision. And
right.
So that's the very beginning. It got better.
Oh, thank goodness. You know, is that why you're so sensitive to the pharmaceutical stuff, problems in the country right now, and over prescriptions and stuff like that?
Well, it's probably related. I mean, I certainly had a drug experience right from the get-go, but that really came from my experience with people, you know, being drugged, and the fact that I became a father in 1980. Six, you know, which was right when the psychiatric drugging of children was just starting to take off. In the 80s, the pharmaceutical industry had identified the child market and really started opening up into that, and then that it really exploded in the early 90s. But right about the same time I became a father was when I also really started practicing as a psychologist, and so I was seeing people, you know, coming to my office, and I'd have a mother coming to my office for a session, but then she ended up talking about having dropped her 6-year-old at school that day, and the teacher pulling on her aside and saying, you know, he was, you know, having a little trouble being organized and getting out of his desk and talking out of turn and stuff like that. And so she had been through one of these little workshops that they do for teachers, training them about what to look for so-called ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and then recommending prescription drugs, a speed type of drug, stimulant drugs, Ritalin at the time, and now also Adderall and stuff like that. But so I was seeing this happening, you know, and I wanted to protect my children, but I just wanted to defend these other children as best I could, and also defend the rights of parents to protect their children. And so it was like a, I don't know what's the word, kind of a tsunami or a perfect storm of events, you know, that kind of got me into that particular battle.
And
right,
that's sort of why you also support Ron Paul's Parental Consent Act?
Yeah, so, you know, I've worked with a lot of politicians over the years, mostly at the state levels, you know, to try to influence legislation related to protecting children and challenging certain aspects of coercive and oppressive psychiatry. But I'll tell you, Ron Paul is the one guy who is really at the federal level proactive with that. So we can talk about that after your break here.
Yeah, we got to take a break, John. We got to pay for this, but we'll be right back. But thank you very much for being with us this evening. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to Dr. John Breeding. Such a pleasure to have you with us. So, Ron Paul, you've worked with a lot of politicians, and you absolutely like that Parental Consent Act he's sponsored?
Ron Paul's introduced again legislation known as the Parental Consent Act, which basically forbids federal funding for universal or mandatory mental health screening and also forbids money for any agency that would use a parent's refusal to consent to screening as a basis for a charge of child neglect or abuse. So basically it's these two things that are really take on two of the ways that children are garnered into the net of psychiatric drugging, and parents are pressured to go along with that. There was this thing in the early 2000s where the second President Bush had a commission that was put together to called the New Freedom Commission, which was going to make recommendations for the mental health system in this country. And it's really another one of these Orwellian nightmares where new freedom really means no freedom, because it's basically what they were. One of the main recommendations they had was for universal mental health screening. They want to find every man, woman, and child in the country and go check them out to see if they're possibly mentally ill. And given that the definition of mental illness is totally subjective, just about everybody qualifies from the point of view of someone who believes in that dynamic, and especially from the point of view of someone who has a vested interest in that dynamic. And they figured out that one of the best places to look, and especially to find children, you know, would be to go into the schools, you know, because you got, you know, 60 million or so, you know, school-age children around the country. And so if you can go in and get mandatory access to them, looking for signs of things like attention deficit, which basically is things like talking out of turn and having a cluttered desk or too much climbing behavior, you know, I'm not making these up, then you've got your candidate. And once you, so really, mental health screening really is code for mass marketing of these drugs. And so Ron Paul's proposed legislation is very straightforward. It just forbids that being universal and mandatory, you know. It says you cannot require that, period. And so that's really, really good. And then the other thing in there is that he's responding to the fact that there's been a trend. We stopped it here in Texas with legislation, but it still goes on, and it definitely goes on around the country, where parents who resisted recommendations and pressure to diagnose their children and consider drugs were sometimes referred to Child Protective Services with accusations of medical neglect. And so he wisely included a clause in there that says, you know, a parent who doesn't want to have their child screened for mental illness, you know, that's not grounds for involvement with Child Protective Services. So, yeah, I'm very, very much for that legislation. It's quite proactive, and it's a, you know, a very concrete, specific effort to put a little stop sign on the runaway freight train and to defend and uphold the rights of parents to protect their children from this thing, which is totally complete 100% fraud and is very, very, very dangerous in the sense that the end result are these toxic, addictive, brain and body damaging classes of psychiatric drugs.
Right. What about this law in California that was recently signed into law by the governor? Is that correct that I'm hearing right about Gardasil out there? A person 16
Jerry
or so
Brown.
Can consent to that?
That's what I read. I haven't had the time to look into that in detail, but what I read was that they were allowing minors to consent to that vaccine, you know, without parental involvement, you know, and so that which is just another disgraceful thing, you know, these type of things really are, you know, institutionalized child abuse, and that's a particularly egregious example given what we know about the dangers of Gardasil and the relative non-danger and non-frequency of that type of cervical cancer.
Right.
And also what we know about cancer is that it can, you know, the current medical model as put forward by the AMA and the FDA and the monopoly medical providers of the United States, which there are alternatives and other ways of looking at this scientifically, but according to the current model, you know, you have different, quote, types of cancer, breast, uterine, you know, skin, brain, spine, this and that, pancreas. But the reality, and from other scientific viewpoints, cancer can show up anywhere. And it basically is named by the location where it pops up. So to say that someone has a cancer of the cervix, you know, that cancer potentially, according to some scientific studies and other countries, the way they look at cancer, that cancer could have just as easily come up in another area of the body. So the idea
you bring in a wiser and more holistic kind of perspective on what's going on with the body, you know, that which is important to consider, you know. So there's that, and then there's, you know, just the specific violation of, you know, parental rights and responsibilities, you know, to be engaged in their young people's lives and make decisions for them. You know, so we're talking about a pre-adolescent, a 12 or 13-year-old, you know, who is going to, you know, be approached in a school setting, and you set up a deal to where, you know, you misinform and miseducate, and then put subtle or not so subtle pressures, you know, and it's just a real criminal activity.
Wasn't that legislation so that the child didn't even have to inform the parent that they got the Gardasil vaccine?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what George is talking about. That's what makes it so egregious.
Empowering a child to make a
life. I've heard situations where they're taking the child, inside the medical office off to the side or in another room and telling them, hey, we can give you this if you want to.
Yeah,
you know, outside the attention of the parent, of the hearing of the parent.
The guardian,
exactly.
The loving provider and guardian.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a crisis. We should be screaming it. We are screaming it from the rooftops. Please listen.
Well, John Breeding's done a lot in this area, and we certainly appreciate, you know, what you've done, John. We're going to take another break here, and we'll be right back. Thank you for being with us. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield. Welcome back to Dr. John Breeding. You wanted to start off with something, sir?
Yes. I want to make a couple of points, and then I have a question for you. The point is just to review a little bit of the data for your listeners, you know, which is that, you know, we have 50, 60 million Americans on various classes of psychiatric drugs today. We have 12, 15, 17 million children on various classes of psychotropic drugs. The drugs are addictive and toxic. The people who take the drugs are less likely to actually get better and have their life back in balance than people who don't take the drugs. They're also a lot more likely to end up with permanent metabolic or neurologic diseases as a result of taking the drugs, and people who take them long-term die on average 25 years younger than the rest of the general population. So they're very, very dangerous. They don't work, and this is all scientifically demonstrated, and the disability rates are going up, so that we're approaching nearly 2% of adult Americans on Social Security disability as a result of so-called psychiatric illness, which is mostly attributable to the long-term effects of these drugs. We've got about an elementary school auditorium of children every day being added to the disability rolls. That's about 250 kids a day, mostly as a result of the effects of these drugs. And so it's really what one lawyer friend of mine referred to as the pharma cost. You know, it's really a destruction of people. And we can just focus on the children and see all these children being permanently disabled as a result of being identified as having these alleged illnesses. The other part of it is that none of these are real illnesses. Not one of these children has been found to have any kind of physical or chemical abnormality that constitutes disease. They've just been selected out on the basis of their behavior. And so it's all really an agency of social control. It's driven by the pharmaceutical industry, which controls the psychiatric industry, which controls the government agencies, mental health agencies, which controls the Congress and this kind of thing. That's the reality of it that I'm putting forward here. So the question that I have is this, because I've listened to y'all's show a couple of times, and I've heard you particularly, George, talking about your kind of psychological theory of why it's hard for people to confront things like the 911 truth data and things like that, you know, and you have a pretty good pretty good theory that I've heard you talk about, you know. So I'm interested in this question, you know, which is, you know, would you apply your thoughts on that to, you know, why is it that so many, many people in this country are unable to really take the data that I just laid out and are so susceptible to the notion that somehow it's a good idea to give these terrible drugs to your children? Is it just simply because they're not getting the information? I think that's part of it, but I think it goes a lot deeper than that, and I was interested in your comments on that.
Well, I think there's a natural DID created shortly after birth is what I think one of the main problems of all humankind. I think there's a split off from the natural self, a second self, a false self. And I think our parents and the whole society at large nurture that false self into maturity. And that false self takes on and yearns to live and to grow and to be nurtured by the wrong-headed things of the world. Okay? And I think that's what we're up to. Like, if you take Afghanistan, we've got false selves battling false selves. These little 10 generals and colonels or whoever are fighting the other Taliban leaders. See what I'm trying to say? But men suffer in this state worse than women, because I believe that men have a great capability to abstract on a deeper level. And with that ability, then they can abstract this ego self, this false self, on a more delusional basis. So I think that the natural state of humankind is one that has a delusional, is a delusional mode of existence being fed by the wrong-headed things in the world.
But is it a natural state, or is it just
Well, it's not natural. See, what it is, I believe that we're as close to our natural self, our real self, shortly after birth. But
right.
after we're born, then our family comes in, and this doesn't matter if it's a good family or a bad family that we're talking about here. They are of the world, and they have been created and are in being influenced by worldly things. So they naturally teach the child and embed in the child this worldly view, but it's from their own false self perspective, which is their own ego.
Right.
You
so
see what I'm saying? So it's an ongoing. It's like wrong-headed. It's like disease of ideas that are wrong-headed. Ideas that we take on, but there are many of those are artificially or abstractions, and we use that to support this ego self, which yearns and cries out to live, and then it becomes resistant to, and like a defense mechanism, it becomes defensive and resistant to truth because it views truth as diminishing and destroying that false self. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that
it's not easy to see because the delusion that we exist in, the delusional mode hides the fact that we are delusional by degree. That's the problem. We cannot in this state of delusion, in this mode of delusion by degree, I'm talking. I'm not talking about that the world is not real or anything. But in this degree of delusion, we cannot see that we are deluded in this way.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. I think that, you know, so two thoughts. You know, one is that,
yeah.
You know, you have to really pretty severely hurt a child, you know, to cause him to not be able to perceive things accurately and to think accurately. So that's one.
Well, see, this disassociation dynamic is part of it, too. You take the bad drugs, you take hurtful, you know, families that are causing all kinds of different problems, then you're creating the DID dynamic even worse than it normally would exist.
Dissociative identity disorder is what George is referring to. And, gentlemen, may I lay out this foundation? And that is that the United States of America, we are a war-torn society that doesn't recognize itself as a society that has suffered decades of multiple wars. We have generation upon generation of fathers, grandfathers, young men that are suffering from war trauma. Whether it's great-grandpa was in World War II or Korea or grandpa was in Vietnam or dad was in the Gulf War.
What we see here is a synergy,
what I call social synergy of either drugs, physical stuff, or psychological ideas that have been embedded and taken on to support that ego self, and either physically or mentally or spiritually, it's keeping us in a mode of deluded delusion. See what I'm saying?
So the male is not given a loving role model because generally the father figure is cold and distant and dealing with his own trauma. That it's usually war or violence-based.
Okay, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. Thanks for being with us, Jeff. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with...
Charlotte Littlefield, and a warm welcome back to John Breeding, Ph.D., author of The Wildest Colts Make the Best Horses, and I'd like to promote your website, which is wildestcolts.com. Welcome back, John.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing that up about the war-torn society. You know, just to share quickly personal experience. I knew my father was emotionally shut down, and I also knew that he was a, I mean, once I got a little older anyway, I knew that he was a fighter pilot in the South Pacific in World War II. But it was, and I knew that I had grown up to be pretty emotionally, even though politically I was sort of at opposite ends of the so-called spectrum, but emotionally I was pretty shut down myself as a young man and had to, you know, really work my way out of that. But what I really, when it really clicked for me was in 1991, I guess it was, when the first Bush sent those planes on January 15th that day over to the so-called Desert Storm, I guess, or whatever it was called, and the first Gulf War. And I had been involved on a peace march that day here in Austin because it was Martin Luther King Day also that he sent those planes out. And my father was in Dallas watching the countdown, you know, because it was like a countdown to midnight and they were sending the planes and stuff. And we had this kind of sparky conflict on the phone, and it was interesting because it was one of the more intense kind of connections that we actually had, even though we were sort of opposite ends of that particular argument. But also he was like so fired, he was shaking, you know, he was just more intense than I think I'd ever seen him. And I realized that he had really identified Saddam Hussein as Hitler, and George Bush was been a pilot too, and so he was really identified with this, you know, as sort of a reenactment of World War II, and I just realized that he was still recovering, you know, from his own shell shock and combat stuff, and it really sunk in, you know, to me what you're saying, it's so true, you know.
And prevailing.
John, let me make a point here. That was a very beautiful story. The false self thrives in a sea of hate and resentment. Okay? Mm-hmm. The real self is compassionate and love-centered and very close to our conscience. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's this false self that is being fed by the 9/11s and the Pearl Harbors and all these other attacks and wars. And it thrives and is nurtured by those kinds of dynamics. See?
Mm, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Charlotte, how are we doing? Are we going to get out of this cycle?
Well, now there's no longer a draft, so now have a volunteer force. So what
less
we're
numbers.
What's that?
Less numbers of our young guys are actually involving in war.
Right.
Is that what
and they're
say?
The ones with the hero complex. By and large, they come from a military family where grandpa, father, or uncle, or cousin served. What I see is our society is being divided off into those that are affiliated with the military-industrial complex and the branches of our various armed forces, and those that don't participate in war. I see a slowdown in the trauma. But those drafts and the things, they are not that long ago for our society. They are still reverberating through the generations.
Yeah, I was
still
going on when I turned of age, for sure.
Oh, yeah, World War II and Vietnam, and yeah, and Korea before that, and all these special other wars that a lot of the population was unaware of, but... So I think we are moving in the right direction ever so painfully slowly, but the people that serve today generally, by and large, like I said, have a history of family members that have served and they're carrying on a certain tradition or a thought process or a paradigm that they were brought up in. And I see our society becoming more divided along that line, actually, to be honest with you.
Well, and on the economic lines, you know, the redistribution of wealth upwards, you know, so, you know, just that 1%, 99% deal, you know, that slogan that we've been hearing lately. But it's really true, you know, that that redistribution of wealth over the last 30 years has had a huge impact, together with the growth of the prison industrial complex, you know, which adds to
right.
that. And then the piece that we're talking about today, which is that, you know, where the largest number of people that are really being altered radically is those 50, 60 million people who are drug-addled, you know, by, and that's the legal prescription psychotropic drugs, you know, and then, you know, putting, you know, tens of millions of the kids as well, and so it's like, that's...
Yeah.
There also is a significant cohort of people that you're talking about that are being sheltered from that, you know, and so that's what we're pulling for, you know, is for those young people to join us and let that expand, right?
Yeah,
right.
And those people on the psychotropic drugs, and unfortunately the children and their parents who have been lied to, betrayed, because I do believe there is some sort of eugenics program underway, but they have no feelings whatsoever. You cannot just block one specific feeling. When you mess around with the serotonin metabolism of the brain, you basically are messing with delicate balance of nature where extreme violence can occur, and the other swing of the pendulum would be a zombie, an emotionally numbed person who can't feel joy or, you know, or pleasure or bad feelings either. They can't feel any of them.
Those are some of the major effects of the drugs that you're talking about. They're all suppressive, emotionally suppressive, you know, and at the two extremes, you get just utter apathy and death on the one hand, and on the other extreme, you know, extreme violence. And you certainly see that over and over again, you know, with either the suicides and deaths, or just the moving into disability and apathy on the one hand, or on the other hand, the so-called senseless violence and the school shootings and all these incidences and stuff. But between those two extremes is this whole spectrum of exactly what you're talking about, you know, where if it's not a going off and killing your mate, it's just this edge of irritability and aggression, you know, or if it's not, you know, going off and trolley crawling into a hole, it's still a shutting down and a numbing. And that's oftentimes considered, you know, the positive therapeutic effect, you know. It's really bad
stuff,
you know.
We need parents to start saying no to the medical monopolies, the AMA and the FDA. Every drug that the FDA approves has supposedly gone through this extensive cycle, but then we come to find out later that, oops, we accidentally killed a few thousand people. It's a racket.
Well, the FDA is a revolving door into the pharmaceutical industry, and so, you know, they basically work together, and you know, all they got to do is basically get some study out there that doesn't kill too many people, and another study where they manage to somehow barely beat a placebo, and then it'll get approved. And once it's on the market, it's used for whatever, you know. There's no holds barred there, and so. It's a,
yeah.
You know, there's no protection for sure from the government.
But there are positive solutions, and George and I always have this tradition of the last segment of the hour bringing up our positive solutions. And
good.
One of the positive solutions is eating a well-balanced diet, getting blood tests from the doctor, right, for nutritional deficiencies, getting interpersonal relationships and love, right?
Yes.
What would your thoughts be on a positive, how a person could be healthy emotionally?
Well, got 30 seconds, yeah.
Okay. You need to get on the Secret Truth Radio show so you can rant and rave and get some of the energy.
Hey, John, you know what we say? We talk about forgiveness on this program, and that can help all humanity.
Amen, brother.
I mean, it doesn't matter if you're an atheist or a Bible-thumping fundamentalist. Forgiving yourself and others is a way out of this thing, out of the way of this hateful world.
The energies of love are abundant, waiting to be called upon.
John Brady, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much.